From the Silver Dawn team that brings you Soapbox Sunday, Tammy and Kathy dive into gritty and informative topics about aging, dementia, and healthcare. Their real and wholehearted conversations dig deep for authentic connection and understanding.
Well, good evening and welcome to Silver Dawn Radio. This is Tammy Newman, your host. And hold on a second, and we've got Kathy Braxton.
Kathy Braxton.
Sorry about that. So we are doing the show remotely. So I'm in Indiana. Kathy is in Illinois in Romeoville. And then our guest is also in Illinois as well, in the Chicagoland area too. So we welcome all of you to Silver Dawn Radio, and our discussion today is depression in the male caregiver. I think this is quite a great and unique topic for us to cover because I don't know that we really talk about this much. What do you think, Kathy?
No, I agree. In fact, we were talking earlier about this, and I've had a lot of experience with sons and nephews of the older adult, and I find that they work through their grief and their sense of loss when someone is going through dementia or the aging process. I find that they go through it much differently than a female caregiver does. So I've always had I have a little opinions about that, and then also the way that they deal with their depression as well.
Absolutely. I agree with that totally. Now, before we bring our guest on, I just wanted to let everyone know, if you are listening live and online, I'm going to be opening up the chat room in just a moment. So if you're online, just scroll down on that page and you'll be able to see our chat room, and that will pop up in just a moment. And then additionally, if you would like to ask a question, make sure you can type it right into that chat box there. Or if you're a little bit braver, what you can do is you can give us a call here and join us in the conversation. And that number to call in is 646-716-8657. Once again, that number is 646-716-8657. So without further ado, let's introduce our guest, Roger Rennick. Hey there, Roger. Thank you for joining us this evening.
Tammy, Kathy, thank you both very well, very much as well, and I appreciate the opportunity to talk.
Absolutely. So, Roger, I know a little bit, just very little, about kind of your caregiving experience, and I think your caregiving experience, I know there's a little bit of a, you know, that home care professional side, but you also were a caregiver to your mother with dementia, if I'm correct in that. And I was wondering, maybe you could share your story with caregiving with your mother.
Absolutely. Thank you. My story actually is about 7 years worth. And just for clarification, my mom wasn't really dementia, but had major health issues. And to give you a full scope of how I became a caregiver, I have a brother as well, and he was certainly in this role with me too. My dad passed away in 1982, and it was the same year that I got married. So it was the best and worst of years for me. My mom, you know, I'm a baby boomer, and my mom chose to live, you know, after my dad passed away suddenly. She remained, you know, living in her home as she had wanted to. And for the next maybe 10 years or so, I mean, we certainly included her with things. We, you know, took her out. She didn't drive, you know, and relied on public transportation and lived on the south side of Chicago. So, again, had things accessible to her, but also relied on family a lot, too, which was fine. So as my mom was getting older, progressing, she had some health issues. And like I said, for about the first 10 years or so, you know, things were, you know, what they were. It was certainly a change for her as well without my dad. But as my mom got older, she developed some health issues, health concerns, and it became more challenging for us to remain, to remain with her. So to make a long story, like I said, about 7 years, my mom passed away in 2004, and the 7 years prior to that became extremely challenging for everybody, her included. And by that, I mean, again, as I said, she had some major health issues. wanted definitely to remain in her own home. We had options for her. You know, we encouraged her to come to live with us, but no, she did not want that. She wanted to stay in her house. And again, respectfully, we understood that. So again, it became very demanding for us as well, because she was very dependent on her family to take care of her. And that's our mom. And we certainly, you know, did that. In addition, though, I also worked evenings, had two small children at the time, and, well, was a husband. So between that and being a caregiver, it became very challenging for us, to the point where I was becoming detached from life, if you will, to a degree. I became very focused, very adamant about taking care of mom. But then, remembering I'm a husband, I'm a father, and I'm working nights, it became very hard, very, very difficult. So that progressed and went on for the course of, like I said, about 7 years. And the toll that it was taking was certainly there, but I really didn't talk about it much. I kept it inside. And me and my brother, we, again, continued to be the caregiver, to work. And again, just to make it clear, I mean, I still was a part of my kids. I was still around, and it's not like I was never home. But the demand that our mom was putting on us, because she wanted to remain independent, not probably realizing herself that her dependence was on us, and we were taking care of her as well, as far as shopping, just everything, maintenance around the house. And we were the ones to be the caregivers for her. And again, it was a very difficult time for all of us, including our mom, too. The last 7 years became extremely challenging with health issues. My mom was falling. It was hospital, home, health care, home, rehab, home, hospital, home again. And I can't tell you enough the feelings that it was when we'd bring mom home and stay with her and then realize, well, we had to get home. And leaving her in her home was very demanding and very hard for us to do. And it was quite an emotional toll over those years.
Absolutely. You know, I think it's very difficult to... You had three major roles going on there, you know, the role of being a husband, the role of being a father, and the role of being a caregiver. And, you know, I think it's interesting to hear these stories from the male perspective. And Kathy, definitely you can chime in here, you know, when you feel it's necessary. But I think, you know, we hear the stories about females trying to juggle it all. But we don't often hear these stories of men being in the same kind of role. We don't really talk about it too much. And, you know, I think one of the things that there's a couple of things that crept up in my mind as you were speaking. And I think the first one was you said you kept everything inside. And I think maybe let's talk about that a little bit. You know, why do you, was there a certain reason that you kept all of those feelings inside? Was, you know, tell us a little bit more about that.
Yeah, I think, you know, being male of the species, I think it genuinely can thought that men do hold a lot inside. And I have a tendency to say that I do believe that to be true. And I'll say that in past tense, because now you can't shut me up. Now I have learned, you know, that it's okay to talk. And I also feel that because of my, you know, my wife and my children, again, they were much younger then, but they were supportive. But I think to a degree, it was difficult for them to always hear the same thing from me about
right,
mom.
Right.
And again, my family was 100% supportive. You know, my wife, very supportive. But I think it got to the point where who wants to hear this anymore? Because to be honest, I mean, I love my mom, but it was difficult even for me to always talk about, because I was living a constant cycle of work, home, you know, caregiving, you know, trying to be a father and a husband as best I could. So I think a lot of times, too, perhaps I didn't even want to talk about it. I just wanted to, I lived it, but I didn't always want to talk about it. And realizing now, in retrospect, I was damaging myself very much by not talking about it, because I needed to talk about it, but I didn't. I'm sorry, but not that that's the case for every man, but I know myself, I just kept inside.
Mm-hmm. So, Roger, I don't know if I'm an anomaly, but I would never be able to manage what you managed without blowing up at some point or having some kind of, I guess when I envision a bottle, trying to stuff as much in without some of it coming out some way, something seeping out. Do you remember or recall having any experiences, whether it was home or work or with your mom, where you kind of, I don't want to say lost it, because you just couldn't keep it all inside anymore? And who did you lose it with?
You know what? I lost it with myself when I was by myself. There were a couple of times, and again, I'll be very, very upfront and honest, because that's what the nature of my conversation is about. You know, even with my mom, it got to the point where, Mom, we need to make some choices here. And we talked to, and I say we, my brother and I, we talked to our mom, trying to explain to her that this was getting very hard for everybody, including her. It wasn't safe for her anymore, you know, to be home. So I lost it outside walking around. I would take, you know, walks where I was trying to take the psychological aspect of what was going on with me and to turn it into some kind of a, I don't know, perhaps some kind of a pretty picture of everything that I was doing was good, but yet I was miserable, as was everybody, you know, as was everybody, So I took it out on myself, and that's probably the best way to explain it. I mean, I had bouts of anger with myself, and then I started to realize that how I was acting outside of taking care of Mom with my family, I was becoming very detached. And, you know, that kind of surfaces more so after my mom passed away. But just going back to your original question, I mean, yes, I absolutely did lose it on regular occasions, but it was with myself, in the company of myself, and with nobody to hear me.
Did you feel like that was the safest place to do that? I mean, in that time?
Yeah, I think, again, because of the fact that I don't know that everybody wanted to hear Roger's story. I cannot, again, emphasize, you know, that my wife would have listened and did listen. But there was a point where how much can she listen to anymore? Because I was repetitive. It was the same thing, work and my mom, and that was my life. That's all I had to talk about. Again, not realizing how much I was damaging myself, but I was not a fun person for a long time. And it took many years afterwards to get to the point where, you know, the reality of what had gone on during that time for everybody, you know, took over when I finally realized what was going on in my own mind.
Mm-hmm. So, Roger, as you were going through this, did you get to a point that you had a realization that you were definitely depressed, and was there anything that you decided to do about that?
Yeah, absolutely. My mom passed away in 2004, and it was after that that I was continuing not being very happy. I was very despondent. I was very alienated, and it was noticeable. You know, I mean, my wife, I was becoming very detached. The turning point came when it was the 4th of July, and with my kids and my wife, we went to a fireworks display. And people were sitting out on the lawn, you know, they had blankets out there, and everybody was just having fun. And I was very alone. I was with my family, but yet I was very alone. I was not having fun. I was not enjoying anything. And all I could think about was how bad I felt. And I said, something is wrong here. And that's what my life was becoming. I was very detached, very sad. I would break into crying out of nowhere. And it was then when I started to realize that something is going on, something that's beyond what I can understand right now. And that's when I decided that I needed some professional help. You know, so, and with that, I went for therapy. And it actually took 5 years of therapy to bring me around again, if you will. You know, and that's when I was, you know, diagnosed with depression. And it was a lot of the stories, a lot of the things involving, you know, my mom, the guilt that I had, the feelings that I didn't do enough, the feelings of loss with my wife, with my family. It was a very, very, very sad time for me. And it took that evening out at 4th of July for me to realize I needed some professional help here.
Do you think your family knew something was wrong before you did?
Yes. Yes, absolutely did. I think because of the fact that I, even about that, they saw it, but they didn't know what was going on with me. And I think they were more fearful about what was going on concerned, of course, but they too did not realize what was going on. And it's difficult for anybody, you know, and this can be for a child, for a spouse, for anybody. It's difficult for anybody to totally understand what somebody with depression is going through unless they've been through it themselves. And I say this with the highest of respect and love towards family, but if you haven't been through it, if you can't understand why you cannot be happy, if you haven't gone through that yourself, it's difficult, and I understand that. I mean, it is difficult to totally grasp what this is all about, because you hear regularly, well, you know, get over it, you know, smile, come on, get happy. Well,
right.
It just doesn't happen that way. It just doesn't happen that way. Even though you want it to, it doesn't happen that way. Yeah. So, yeah, it was very very hard for my family as well to understand what I was going through. When I, you know, started going for therapy, and then, you know, was clearly diagnosed with depression, then it started to come out. Yeah, my wife was included in some of the sessions, and it was a learning experience. As opposed to me having it, it was a learning experience for my wife to try to understand better what I was going through, and specifically why, you know, why I was going through this.
Do you think, so I have a two-questioner, so do you think that men grieve and talk about the guilt that you were feeling about not doing enough? Because I know we talk, as women, we talk a lot about that. We always feel like we're pulled in many directions. And I know my husband talks about that too, but in a different way. So do you believe that not only do men grieve differently, but if so, why do you think they do?
Yeah, I think it goes back to such an old cliche about, you know, the masculinity of a man. You know, the picture of a man crying is, when you think about it, oh gosh, you know, he's crying. He doesn't have feelings, or he doesn't know how to show his feelings. I think of the male, and again, I'm speaking specifically for myself. I didn't want to admit, you know, that I had a problem because I did, you know. And I think I felt that I can overcome it. I'm a man. I'm going to flex my muscles,
right,
and I'm going to go conquer the world. I can. This is not a big deal. I mean, you know, cut off my right arm. Okay, I got a real problem here, but I'll get over that one too. You know, we'll just keep moving on here. So I think, you know, from the way that I grew up, that a man is a man, and he doesn't show feelings. He can have feelings, but you don't know what they are. I think that's changing in today, you know, 2016. I think that's changing gradually, and I totally believe that's a good thing. I also think that some, unfortunately, in some cases, when you hear about depression and what it can do to people, you hear the aftermath as opposed to during the time that is actually occurring. But, you know, for myself, it was that it's going to get better. I can deal with this myself. I don't need any help. And again, I'm a big, strong man with, you know, bulging muscles, and I can do this. I can do this. You know, I don't need any help.
Right.
Well, no, that was not the case, folks. Not the case.
You know, I think it's unfortunate that we as a society have done that labeling of men, because I think it's so detrimental, you know, for you to go through these types of experiences thinking, hey, you know, I'm a man, I can handle this. And,
right.
you know, oftentimes, you know, there's more severe situations. You know, I commend you for being able to see that you needed help and that you went for it and you did get the help. But, you know, unfortunately,
right.
in some situations, it becomes such a detrimental thing for people. So is
Absolutely,
there,
yeah.
you know, I know you and I talked, and you talked very fondly of, I think there's a support group that you,
yes.
Maybe you could talk a little bit further about that for us.
Absolutely. 2 years ago, I went through the therapy process, and as I was getting older myself, I started to this day, the memories with my mom, I mean, I have many loving memories, wonderful memories. I have very sad memories when we took her out of her house, when we took her to the nursing home, when she died, we weren't there. Those memories are burned into my mind forever and ever and ever. About 2 years ago, ironically, I found a website where you can list, it's free speakers, and you can list your experience as far as what you would like to talk to other people about. And it was one of those little things where I said, boy, you know what? Therapy, and now I talk more about my mom, what we went through. When I get together with my brother, we regularly still talk about mom, the stories of, and that experience. And I had the idea of, I wonder if others would be interested in hearing about this as well. So I put my information out on this website, not particularly thinking anything would happen. And son of a gun, I got a call about speaking to others who have been or are going through the caregiving process. And it really took off to the sense of when I've never done this before in my life, I put a little program together. And the first time I did this ever, it was about 45 people at a nursing facility or assisted living, I should say. And Tammy, Kathy, you'd have thought a spotlight shined on me, and I just talked and opened it up, and it was an hour and a half of the most incredible conversation I've ever had, and I really liked this. I said, you know what? Others were catching on to what I was talking about, so I was done there, and the response from that evening was so, and I don't want to over-exaggerate it, but it was overwhelming to the staff at the facility that they called me and they said, would you come back again? I said, my gosh,
wow.
Yes, I would love to. So I did. I went back a month later, and it actually branched off into a monthly support group. And the support group itself, and sometimes when you hear the word support, people are going to say, oh, yeah, I mean, here we go with the man thing again, where it's, oh, no, I don't need support. I don't need it. I don't need any support. Who needs support? You know, well, you might not think it, but yeah, you do. So call it support group, call it assisting group, call it whatever you will. But it really has taken off, and I'm doing this on a regular basis to other facilities as well. Ironically, it's still the females that are coming, you know, for the
mm-hmm.
but the evening that I was there talking, there were more than one men sitting there, and I swear to you both, I could see the heads shaking as I was talking, in a good way, an up and down shake, you know, where it's like, yeah, I get what he's talking about. And the whole idea of it was not me. It's what are you going through and how can you relate to me of what I'm talking about? And what I'm finding out is more and more people are saying, yeah, this is what I've gone through. Was my experience more than anybody else's? Probably not. Was it equal? Possibly. Was it less than others? Possibly. But the point was that just to talk about it and to share ideas with others seems to be a human element that people really do get. And when you're talking about it to others, they can relate. And believe it or not, I do believe that's therapy in itself. So a long response to your question, but the support group, again, we're looking at, you know, continuing it. And I still do presentations on occasion, you know, to a couple of different facilities. And it does seem to be growing as it goes along. It's very uncomplicated, but yet it's very complicated.
Tammy, can you see me nodding my head where I'm at right now? Do you see
Yeah, even though I'm not there.
You know, that's what I was doing. Yes, you knew
even
I was.
Even though I'm a state away. Yes, I can.
Yeah, I don't come out with any slideshows. I do have a handout I give. Yeah. I don't juggle. I don't sing. I talk. And for, I'll tell you, when I'm at these facilities, the first time I did another one at a different facility, the people were saying, when did this all happen to you? And I said, well, it would be 12 years now. And they said, you're talking about this like this just happened. I said, well, yeah, it's in me, and it will be in me forever. You know, and here's what here's what I went through, and how can you relate to this? And again, I can't tell you enough about how many people are catching on that just to talk about it, to share ideas. It does help. It really. And had I had something like that, now goodness knows, I probably wouldn't have gone. You know, I'm
right.
Muscles and all that stuff. But I think as this continues, I think more and more people are going to see, men included, that it's okay to talk about this. We're humans, and it's a human experience. Let's share the ideas.
Yeah, I think a lot to be said to be able to share those experiences, because I think sometimes, even if someone's not even at the point where they can even maybe talk or express their feelings about something, I think just even knowing, oh, wow, he had a difficult time too. You know, there's
right.
I think there's a lot to be able to even hear that story. Maybe they're not at a spot or a place where they feel comfortable even sharing, but just hearing, I think, is really transformative for many people.
Yes, it is. And I think, again, it's just the basic human talking. And I learned that by 7 years, you know, and again, I'm exaggerating. I mean, it was, but that time span of not talking, and now you can't
shut
me up about this. You know? And I think it remains as therapeutic for me, you know, as it does for others as well. And, you know, like I said, it is so uncomplicated, but yet it's probably the most complicated thing, you know, people can, you know, can actually go through. So very challenging, very challenging. Yeah.
Yeah. I think it's a process. The whole healing process is, you know, you may have been going through that for 7 years, but just think about it, you know, to heal, you know, is going to take some time to go through that process, and at whatever pace is okay to be going through it at that pace.
Yeah, and from the medical aspect, you know, depression, was that a direct result of those years? It's suggested that probably yes. I mean, but depression is also a medical. I mean, there's a medical side to that as well. So is it simply, I mean, we all have sad times. We all have bad times. I mean, that's human, and that will always continue. But when something is as extreme, I think, you know, from what I was told, that it was the consistent years of that, you know, was a mental challenge, you know, so the depression side came probably as a result of, but again, that's its own story as well, because as I said, it is a medical condition as well. You know.
Absolutely. So Roger, we're at this point in time in the show where we need to wrap things up, and it's been a great conversation, and I wish we had some more time, but that really lends us to inviting you back sometime. But before I do that, I wanted to see if people are interested in talking to, interested in the support group or having you come out to maybe a facility or a church or something of that nature, how can they reach you?
The best thing, I can give my email address if that would be appropriate.
That would be perfect.
All righty. It's very simply lowercase R, S as in Sam, R-E-N-I-K, the number 2 at att.net. So R-S-R-E-N-I-K, the number 2 at att.net.
Well, Roger, what we're going to do is we're going to put all that information on our Facebook page and make sure that we get that information out to others. And
wonderful.
I want to thank you so much for taking some time out of your Wednesday evening to be with us.
Tammy, Kathy, I appreciate it. Thank you very much for having me. And I would love to come back if that can happen.
we will work on making that happen. Thank you so much.
Yeah, lots of questions.
All right.
That'd be wonderful.
Thank you. Thank you both as well.
You're welcome. It was a pleasure having everyone join us in this conversation this evening. I think we've just kind of just tapped the nail on the head in regards to this conversation in regards to male caregivers, and I think this is a subject that we need to keep diving into so that more men feel very comfortable in, you know, sharing their thoughts and everything that they're going through and really finding the help that they need when going through the journey of caregiving. And I know that Kathy and I want to thank you so much for joining in the conversation. And you can definitely find out more about us by going to the website dementiaraw.com, or you can find us on Facebook at facebook.com/SilverDawnRadio, or you can also tweet us at SilverDawnRadio. We want to thank all of you for joining in the conversation, and be well.